And good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials this Saturday morning. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I think I've had like about 10 requests of what people want me to discuss on the radio this morning, and this week was just one of those weeks I just couldn't get to all of them. But what I'm going to do is I'm gonna deliver this morning what I prepared for, and sometimes you just do what you can do. Have you ever heard the phrase in life that you have to play the hand you're dealt? Well, in reality, you've only got a few options, and you're trying to make the very best choices that you can. And the choices that you make are going to be based on the information you have. Do you want to be given full disclosure, or do you just want to be given a narrative, do this because I say so? Well, it helps if we can add knowledge to our repertoire of making decisions, especially when it comes to health. Like I tell people all the time, I'm very, very biased. I'm biased toward remedies that are very, very complementary to the human cell, things that help encourage and help and strengthen and heal, and that's what I like to focus on. When it comes to therapies that are completely toxic and they risk destroying a human being from living, well, I don't like those. I prefer those that are really, really good for you, the ones that God Himself has made. And I'm telling you, I just kind of stand back in awe sometimes of how radically amazing some of these things are. But God is the designer of them. So what I want to do is I want to share with you some information this morning, and hopefully we can learn together. Okay, this first article that I came across, it caught my attention. What is the title of it? It comes from researchers at the Tel Aviv University. They're looking at, what about using fish oil or other omega as a source of omega-3 fatty acid, and what about using other types of oils also? But what they're doing is, in this study, they want to put an organism under great stress and then see what happens on the ones that were under great stress that took fish oil and those that did not. Okay. Let me see. It says a diet rich in fish oil or other sources of omega-3 fatty acids. When I say fish oil, have you ever heard of cod liver oil before? Have you ever heard of salmon oil? So if you go to a restaurant out to eat today and you throw a birthday party for your sister and she orders salmon, well, there is going to be good omega-3 fatty acids in the salmon. Or if you eat a can of rich, delicious Moroccan sardines. Or if you eat cod or halibut. Anyway, you get the gist of it. But what they wanted to do is they wanted to see if fish oil would do anything to stop the spread of cancer cells under the conditions of physical stress. And I think this article is published in a journal called Clinical Nutrition. But yeah, it was an animal study. Okay. All right, first things first. There is a type of cell that's produced by your immune system. It's called a natural killer cell. I'm telling you, these are too cool. They are constantly out in the real world, meaning out in your body, and they're on search and destroy missions. Anything that doesn't belong inside of you, that's not you, it's going to kill it, eat it, beat it up, chop it to pieces, digest it, and then get rid of it when you go to the bathroom. Does that make sense? And so to start off, they're looking at, what about natural killer cells, the occurrence of cancer, and then fish oil, and does that make a difference? And the author of the study says if you have enough healthy natural killer cells present in your body, then cancer cells really don't stand a chance. It's like anything else. Do you want to go to war with one soldier against a million soldiers? No, you don't. You want the odds to be in your favor. And so if you had 2 million soldiers to counter a million soldiers, wouldn't that stand to chance that you got better odds in your favor? A 2-to-1? Because what happens is, if you have enough good functioning natural killer cells, then cancer doesn't stand a chance. They will absolutely annihilate the cancer. They will surround it, eat it, get rid of it. But that's what you want. Just like if you had a parasite in your body, or if you had a fungus growing, or a virus, you want those natural killer cells to do their job. But all this changes when the physical body or the human body is under great heavy physical stress, which usually also contributes to great emotional and mental stress also. And so, for example, what they're looking at is that when they're trying to recreate the stress, they're just doing a physical operation or a surgery on the animals, and they want to see what happens. So they know that when healthy people have a diet that's rich in the good omega-3 fatty acids, and it contains fatty acids such as DHA and EPA, it stands for docosahexaenoic acid and eicosapentaenoic acid, they don't really seem to have the same effect on the immune system under these circumstances. But in a study, if you give omega-3 fatty acids, meaning fish oil, to laboratory animals that are undergoing surgeries or an operation of some kind, or human beings that have undergone an operation, what they do is quite amazing. What they do is they prevent the number of our immune cells from decreasing. And there's like several charts on the study. You can't really see them. So based on that, they said, okay, if somebody has had to undergo a surgery, and let's just make up one. Say there is a cancer that's found in your body and the surgeon is going to operate to remove as much of the tumor as possible. And in many cases, that's a really good strategy. So Israeli researchers want to know whether the fish, the fatty acid from fish or fish oil, could help improve the chances of cancer patients who undergo operations or surgeries. And so what they did was they did experiments on mice and rats, two different little furry critters there. Both of them, one looks cute, one looks evil. I'm just joking. I know there's some people out there, they love rats as pets. They are smart, though. Oh, my goodness, they're smart. And so what they did was they divided the mice and the rats into three groups, and one group of rats, they just got the ordinary Purina rat chow. Then the next group of rats, they had the rat chow, but it was 10% omega-3 fatty acids that came from fish oil, like cod liver oil. And then the third group of rats, they gave them 10% of that rat chow consumed was composed of an omega-6 fatty acid. And so you're probably asking the question, what is an omega-6 fatty acid? Well, that's something like soybean oil or corn or canola oil. Personally, I think that canola oil might be one of the most toxic oils on the planet. You don't want that in your body. That's the reason, and they use a boatload of it in salad dressing. So if you could find any way to start consuming salad dressings based on olive oil, that is what you want, my friend. Also, there's others like safflower oil. You may have seen that one before. Or sunflower seed oil. Okay, so here's how they put them to the test. Okay, the researchers injected a type of a melanoma human tumor. It's called the B16F10.9. I didn't make up the name of that. But that's the way that researchers can identify this particular tumor marker, or this particular tumor. And it comes from a human melanoma, which I don't know if you know much about melanomas. Not good. Okay, so what they did was they injected these human melanoma tumors into these three different groups of rats and mice. And when the tumor, and they injected it into their paws, I know that doesn't sound pleasant. It's just the way it is. I'm just sharing the information with you. So when they inject this melanoma tumor, guess what's going to happen, folks? It is going to grow. It is going to grow. Mm-hmm. Every single time. It's just a matter of what can we do to upset the growth of the tumor. So when the tumor was big enough to remove, the researchers just removed it surgically, and then they took a look at what was happening. And what they did was they plotted a graph, which was a survival rate. And let's just say that based on the type of food that the rat or the mouse was given, all they did was they looked at the survival rate, whether it was omega-6 fatty acids like from soybean oil or canola, or the group of rats that just had the standard rat chow, you know, no fatty acids, or the group that had the fish oil. Okay, the figure below shows that mice that had been given the fish oil, they had absolutely the highest survival rate after the operation of the animals compared to the other two groups. And so, I'm just looking right here. What they do is they have a graph that shows the numbers of days post-tumor excision. They removed it, and they find out how long did they live. And basically, I'm just looking at the chart right here. It looks like about 77% of all the rats and the mice at day number 50 were still alive that were on fish oil, whereas the group that was on the rat chow and the omega-6 fatty acids, man, that was like maybe 40 and 50%. It didn't do near as well. And that's all they did the study for, was for about 55 days or so. But to me, that's just so interesting. Here's another one right here. Same deal. In another experiment, the researchers injected MADB106 lung cancer cells into the bloodstream of lab rats. That's what they're doing, which is, I know it sounds weird, but they're injecting living cancer cells from a human being directly into the bloodstream of lab rats. Half of the lab rats had just undergone abdominal surgery, and what they're doing is they're trying to put the rats under great stress. After 12 hours, the researchers examined whether they could still detect cancer cells in the lungs, which just means lung tumor retention. The figure above shows that the fewest cancer cells were found in the lungs of animals that had been given omega-3 fatty acids to their diet. And yeah, it's just incredible. The fish oil is just like, it's a stark contrast. It makes you wonder what happens. You know what I was referring to about the natural killer cells? It just makes you wonder, the more stress that you're under, when a human being or an animal consumes more fish oil, it enables your natural killer cells to do their job more efficiently. And so, I know there's no human studies where they take a normal human being and give them fish oil, then inject them with cancer cells. I'm sure there's plenty of people that have thought of that. That's just horrible. Anyway, the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. This next article that I'm going to read is going to be based on, I was trying to answer a question, and so I was looking at the book on longevity by Dr. Sinclair. And it's a relatively recent publication. And a lot of what I read in there, I'm kind of puzzled by. And I just question whether or not it's exactly, you know, do you believe it is okay to question things like, is this really true? Does it really work that way? But I want you to know, I came across this one article right here. And so you're just going to have to tell me what you think about this. And so literally, when I started doing a little bit of study on this topic, I just came across so much information. It's overwhelming. I can't process all of it. So what I do is I have to break it up in bite-sized chunks that I like the sound of. So you can determine yourself that I am biased, because what I'm doing is I'm looking for articles I like the sound of. Actually, you know what I'm really doing here? I'm looking up articles that I think benefit me and others. There's my criteria. If I can come across information that benefits you and helps you and encourages you, that's really what I'm after. Because at the end of the day, don't you want somebody giving you some positive things that you can do to help yourself? Yeah, then it's your choice to do them or not. Okay, so scientists have published hundreds of studies in which they have tested almost all possible natural health-promoting and life-extending substances. And what they're doing is they're using a worm or a nematode called, I'm going to butcher this. The name of the worm they're testing on is Cyanohorbaditis elegans. I know, I butchered that one too. And what they're doing is they're taking this laboratory animal, which is a nematode or a worm, And I want to find out which substances actually work the best. And here's a study right here. It says the answer to that question is what causes these laboratory worms or nematodes to live a lot longer. It's published in a review article by Jan Martel, a molecular immunologist from the Chang Gung University in Taiwan. Now, the Chang Gung University is not to be confused with the Wang Chung University in Taiwan. I'm just joking. Sorry about that. It was published in the journal Microbial Cells. So this is a very interesting article. I'm just trying to make it sound simple. And what they do is they have like a whole list of phytochemicals. Do you know what the term phytochemical means? It means a substance that would be found in nature, growing or identified or isolated from a plant. Okay? Okay, here's the results right here. And I've got a chart. I'm going to share some of them with you. The most promising extender of life is, I'm telling you, this is fabulous. I love this chart right here. I really wish you could look at it with me. Then we could just discuss it. So here's the top three natural elements that were found in nature that played a role at greatly extending the lifespan of this nematode or this worm. Okay? You're probably asking, what is number one? Well, the most promising one as the extender of life in these nematodes is a substance called rosmarinic acid. And guess where that's found? Well, I think it's found in rosemary, but I could not find the concentration in 30 seconds when I looked it up this morning. But it's also found in mint. So do you know what mint tea is? Have you ever heard of a substance called lemon balm? I think it's called Melissa officinalis. And so, as a matter of fact, I think the Indian herb ashwagandha is filled with rosmaric acid. Very interesting. And so when they would give lemon balm and mint to these worms, it would extend the lifespan of the nematodes by 63%. You want to guess what compounds were number two and number three on the list? Well, here they are. Have you ever heard of a fruit called a pomegranate? Okay. I wonder what it means that they embroidered pomegranates into the robes of the high priest in the book of Leviticus. Well, I'm going to tell you this. If you follow and obey the word of God, that's probably going to extend your life. How about that? Pomegranate extended the lifespan of the nematode worm by 56%. Well, what's number next? Curcumin. Have you ever heard of curcumin or turmeric? Well, all these things are highly complicated, but all they're doing is they're giving them to the worms to see which ones cause the worms to live longer. So there's your top three: rosmarinic acid, pomegranate, and curcumin. Now that's interesting because all these things are doable. Now, there's two other chemicals in here that really seem to perform really, really well also. And I need to study these both, but the two phytochemicals that you may not really know or have heard of are called syringitin and laricitrin. I'm so sorry. Those two phytochemicals that really worked well also is syringitin and laricitrin. Okay, I think the laricitrin comes from where? It comes from red grapes. And the syringitin comes from pepper. And so this, to me, is interesting. And so just a little bit of an idea right here. If these compounds extended the life of a laboratory nematode, what does that mean? Does that mean the nematode did not die of heart disease, cancer, dementia, arthritis, Alzheimer's, infection? Of course. Every animal that lives on the earth, whether it's a worm, a fish, a moose that lives in Alaska, a timber wolf in Montana, all of them are susceptible to diseases. And so what does that mean to you if there's something that you can take that may have, and I got to be careful how I say this because I've read so much on this, but I still believe, you know, for example, I was talking with Louisa this week and I'm saying she was making a comment that she likes to use thyme, T-H-Y-M-E. Well, one of the books that I got in the mail this last week, I find it so comical because it's just devoted to one topic. It's just devoted to the scientific and the uses of thyme, T-H-Y-M-E. And, of course, I didn't know this, but it was one of the main ingredients that the Egyptians would use when they were embalming people. And I think the Egyptians have mastered the embalming procedure, at least back in the time of King Tut, right? Or the pharaohs. And all their other famous royal people that they would bury and try to preserve their bodies. So if you add thyme to, and that's one of the greatest ways, is the stuff is used like crazy. Thyme is almost like a form of mint. And you know what? It probably contains rosmarinic acid. And that's, I'm going to go to the book and I'm going to look it up and we're going to see what breaks down as to the scientific properties or what are the chemical properties of thyme that allow it to be so good. But what they do is, this stuff is still used like crazy all over the world because they add it to food. Why do they add this to food? Because if they put thyme either in cosmetics or food or in the form of a supplement, guess what happens? It preserves the life of it. It does not spoil or degradate or deteriorate or go bad when they add thyme to it. Does that make sense? Okay. This right here, I did not copy these off right here. But let me just tell you, these are the other articles about the rosmarinic acid. They said Mentha spicata, which I guess that's going to be peppermint, or it's going to be a form of mint. They said this article, it was published in 2018, it says it fixes lapses in your memory. Well, I think I need to look that one up, don't you? How about this one right here? 2 cups of mint tea a day, and mint tea contains rosmarinic acid. Guess what that does? It helps if you have worn out knee joints. Do you know anybody out there right now that's listening to this program that might could benefit from that? Okie dokie. The answer is yes, yes, and yes. Every so often, I'll have a lapse in my memory, and I'll think, I know that person, but I can't remember their name, their face, and I'll start talking to them, and I keep thinking, Roy, what is their name? Anyway, and I don't want to make any excuses, so I'll tell you what, this looks very appealing, the idea of mint tea. And maybe you know people that drink mint tea all the time, and you say, you know, now that I think of it, their mind is real sharp. They're known for having a very sharp mind. Here's the other studies right here. This one I did not look up either, but it's on my list. Okay, there was a test tube study. There is an herb called ashwagandha. Quite often, this herb is used when somebody's just dealing with horrific mental and emotional stress and they're trying to get their body to handle the stress better so it can be like water on a duck's back and just roll off of them. But they said in this test tube study, rosmarinic acid that comes from ashwagandha, bingo, there's another plant that contains rosmarinic acid, that's what caused those worms or nematode to live longer than any other. They said it inhibits Alzheimer's disease. Well, I think I'd like to look that one up. And here's another one right here. There's an herb that's called holy basil. Well, evidently, it's a member of the mint family also. And so in this particular study, in animal studies, I think the name of holy basil is Oxymum sanctum. Holy basil. I know, that's probably the Latin root word and probably means the holy basil. Well, guess what it has also? Rosmarinic acid. But in this study, it says take a look at this because it greatly enhances or improves testosterone production in men. Interesting. Good morning and welcome to the program.
I turned myself off. Dr. Morgan, I was wondering, I know I've heard you oftentimes speak of the benefit of coconut oil. And for several years, I took coconut oil, and then I sort of, I don't know, forgot, stopped it. And when I went back to take it, my body is just not digesting or absorbing the fat very well. My tummy rumbles, I get diarrhea, and it's become a real problem. And I can't even take a cod liver oil supplement or two or three.
It's probably telling me about the condition of your gallbladder, bile ducts, and liver.
Okay.
Meaning, if you used to take coconut oil and olive oil and fish oil, mm-hmm. and never had an issue with them, there was no burping, right. there was no belching, it didn't make you bloat. But if your gallbladder and your bile ducts that are in the liver become congested and thickened with congealed bile, that's when you're going to see all that happen. It's going to kind of backfire on you.
Okay.
I'm not trying to make a joke by saying this, but if you said, I think I'm going to go to my favorite restaurant that serves the greasiest chili and onion rings. Well, you're probably going to have a problem with those two.
Absolutely.
And so what your body's telling you is, we need to find a way to get your gallbladder in better working order. So can I give you a couple ideas, or do you have any questions on that?
I want to know what you would recommend for my gallbladder.
Okay, there is a compound found in nature. It's called D-limonene. So if I say the name lime, where do you think it comes from?
I'm thinking lime.
You're ding, ding, ding. You're 100% correct. So D-limonene is found in the skins of both lemons and limes. And I think it's also found in some concentration like in satsumas and tangerines, clementines, grapefruit, stuff like that. But specifically, I think it's been tested more from lemons than probably any other source of all time.
Okay.
And so there was one study that I looked up the other day, and it was showing when they would take lemon and just make an infusion out of it, you know, where you might chop it up and just soak it in water. And what you're doing is you're having the water act like a solvent to try to dissolve and remove the limonene from the rind of the lemon. If you drink that, oh, my goodness, it's very, very protective against the development of breast cancer in women. So that was interesting to me. But what the lemon juice and the limonene will do if you consume it with some regular consumption, it's going to start the process of slowly dissolving and breaking down the gunk that's in your liver. Does that make sense?
It does.
I mean, it won't do it in one day, but if you're consistent. So if you have a habit of making yourself herbal tea, could you imagine how you could really benefit that just by squeezing lemon juice or putting a little bit of lemon into it?
Okay.
So that's good right there. The other thing that I would have you look at, there is an herbal tea called dandelion root.
Okay.
And so if you're trying, and all I'm doing is I'm just trying to approach this from as many angles as possible to try to figure this out. So you've got limonene that comes from lemons, so just buy lemons, add it to the herbal tea that you're drinking. The teas are going to be the best. You're probably going to be things like milk thistle or dandelion root tea. Those tend to be more specific when there's a bile duct issue and you're trying to clean that stuff out. So the lemon juice will play a role to act like a solvent to help scrub it clean over time. The other thing that I want you to think of is we've got to get enough blood flow through the liver. And it may be that you're going to tell me that you walk 3 miles every day. Man, did I say something funny? I'm just thinking, you've got to get enough velocity and speed and volume of blood through the liver when you're trying to fix it. So, like, if somebody had a laboratory analysis, like an MRI or an ultrasound of the liver, and the radiologist comes back and writes a report that the person has steatohepatitis, or if they just say in normal nomenclature that the person has a fatty liver, they might actually rate it like a mild fatty liver or moderate or severe, or they might say the term there's fatty infiltrate or infiltrate in the liver. Either way you slice or dice it, there's a fatty liver. The liver's gunked up with fat, and when your liver's full of fat, it don't work right. And so the more that you walk and move, you're giving your body a chance to run more blood through the liver to help clean it and repair it. And plus, one study that I read years ago, it said the magical things, and I'm using the word magical as just a figure of speech. I don't mean magic like you throw down your rod or your staff and it turns into a snake. Now, Charlton Heston could get away with that, but I can't. Mm-hmm. You know who he was, don't you? That was Moses.
I do.
That was a great movie, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
And so when you walk nonstop for 45 minutes at a good pace, it's around the 45-minute mark that your body starts removing fat from the liver. So I think you can tell which direction I'm kind of leading you with this. From 45 minutes to the 50-minute mark, that's where you're efficiently burning liver instead of burning fat in the liver instead of carbohydrates. So really, for the first 10 minutes that you're going for a walk, you're only burning carbohydrates. You're not even touching fat. And so the efficiency of burning fat goes up, and it's really around peak efficiency around 45 minutes. So every minute that you continue to walk or move, whether that's on a treadmill or a bicycle or other forms of exercise, you're just making it easier for your body to say, oh, now we get it. All the enzymes are in place and all the hormones are perfect. Now we can start burning fat from the liver. And so when you do it longer than 45 minutes, now we're tapping into removing the fat from the liver. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
Okay, so next part of the equation. There is a concept called intermittent fasting. Or another way of saying it is, it's a feeding window. So if you eat all the food that you're ever going to eat in an 8-hour window, that means you're fasting for 16 hours a day, essentially. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
That has been shown to specifically help. Now, what I tend to think of as far as remedies go, there's one remedy that I use called AF beta food. That is very, very helpful when a person consumes coconut oil or fish oil and it makes them burp or belch, or you experience bloating and fullness, and so you feel great, but you go eat the right kind of meal, and 10 to 20 minutes after the meal, you go, great, I feel like I'm 9 months pregnant, I don't know what happened here, I'm miserable, I almost wish I didn't eat. Well, that's your gallbladder talking right there.
Okay.
Some other symptoms would be if you catch yourself wanting to burp and belch, or if you wake up in the morning and you clench your teeth, or you wake up with your jaws a little bit sore, like, why am I clenching my teeth so much at night? That's your gallbladder talking. Or pain in your right shoulder blade, right between the shoulder and the spine, right there on the right side. That's the gallbladder. So if your right shoulder just kind of aches on the backside all the time, that's your gallbladder talking.
Okay.
And then the skin, it tends to become more dry. You get where I'm coming from?
Yes.
So that would be one thing. Sometimes I'll also use what are called bile salts, and they can come from what's called ox bile. Oxen referring to a very large cow with horns?
Yes. Okay.
So, have you ever heard of those before?
I have. The AF beta food, what is that? I mean, is that...
That's a natural food-based product that comes from a company called Standard Process.
Okay.
But the reason I say that one is I like it because it really targets the bile ducts in the gallbladder.
Okay.
I know this sounds crazy about what I'm fixing to tell you, but there is a nerve called the Great Wanderer. Sometimes it's called the vagus nerve. Have you ever heard of that before?
I have.
It is incredible. This is one example. The vagus nerve is the primary nerve supply that innervates the heart. But as the vagus nerve begins to fail, if it becomes exhausted and worn out, it doesn't do its job anymore, guess what a person has to have installed in their chest? It's called a pacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
But 90% of all the parasympathetic nerve fibers that help heal your body, they innervate the gallbladder. The other way that I can make a connection with this is, there is a hormone that your body produces called cholecystokinin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that's what sends a signal to trigger the gallbladder to do its job and to contract and to push bile in the intestines. But it's been shown to be the number one predictor of how much serotonin production a woman's going to have. So there's a lot of connections and moving parts with this. So if the gallbladder is underperforming, you're going to be more prone to being... And just take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. I'm not trying to say I understand what's going on with you, but a woman's going to have like a shorter fuse. She's going to be a little bit more irritable. She's probably going to look at things with a little bit more negativity. That's not you, of course, but when you have plenty of serotonin production, usually you say to yourself, man, everything is A-OK with my world today. I feel like $1 million. Everything is going to go well. When you're low in serotonin, you go, oh, my goodness, this is never going to work out. They won't accept my coupon for the Happy Meal. I don't know how this is ever going to, my life is ever going to be any better. You know, stuff like that. But the gallbladder has a lot to do with that. And if you look at all the old school doctors, and I like to read about those guys from the like the turn of the century, the early 1900s.
Right.
They would always call the gallbladder the trash can of the body. So what am I supposed to do with that? I'm saying, okay, if you can't tolerate coconut oil, what that really means is you're toxic.
Uh-huh.
And we need to start helping your body heal. But we're going to have to clean out the bile ducts. We're going to have to scrub them clean. So it's going to be everything I told you. Plus, you've got to convince yourself you can't eat junk food.
Okay.
And lots of carbohydrates are hard. Now, if you want carbohydrates, I am going to recommend all the carbohydrates you want. They're called cherries, blueberries. Let me see. What else could I recommend? How about raspberries? You like those?
Yes.
So every time that you need something sweet, it's going to be called a bowl of cherries. Frozen cherries.
Okay.
So these are some of the ways that you start the process of fixing it.
Okay, that sounds good. I appreciate that.
You're sure welcome. Well, thank you very much for your phone call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, there's plenty of time for another phone call, or two, or three, or four. This is the other article that I thought was interesting right here. There's an herb called Melissa officinalis, which that's going to be a lemon balm. Remember, that's what I was referring to earlier before the phone call about rosmarinic acid. And it says Melissa officinalis. This is just a title. I didn't even copy it to look it up. I think I want to read it, though. It says it's a smart drug. Better known as lemon balm, and they're saying it improves memory. Well, that's what made the worms live 63% longer. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Doctor. This
Hello.
Is your friend from Pasadena.
Is this the Pasadena kid?
It is.
And, what's your top recommendation for the people of the world today that are listening?
Well, I've been thinking on the theme of fasting, and I've
fasting.
Done 2 40-day fasts in my life, and I've seen 2 miracles during that time through fasting and prayer.
What were they?
My niece.
Am I being rude by asking?
No, I'll tell you one of them. My niece was having PMS. She missed her college registration. She had some other things going on. She overdosed on Tylenol.
Oh, no.
Her toxicity level went to like 9,000. They told that my sister she was going to have a liver transplant. They were already requisitioning the chopper to take her to the Mayo Clinic where they were going to do this. And they had already... got the team ready, and this little Chinese doctor came down the hall saying something like this: "It's a miracle! It's a miracle! Her toxicity level is coming down."
Oh, wow.
We had joined hands in my mother's house and prayed, and I was in the 30th day of a fast, and I contribute that to what God did through prayer and fasting, and he says some things only come through prayer and fasting.
You're so right about that. This is a great story. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And during that time, I saw some things that had never happened in my life, like not having any reactions to a severe allergy in the season, that it was just yellow pollen every day. I had no reactions whatsoever for the first time in my life. So
I'm thinking we can learn something from this.
Yes, sirree. It was absolutely, I'm not kidding you. It was a miracle, I think. So I give God the glory for that.
I think you're a wise man to give God all the glory and the credit for that one.
Thank you, sir. One of the things I wanted to ask you was, we're going kayaking, one of my fellow auctioneers and me today, kayaking.
I'm sorry, it doesn't sound good without me going.
Well, you're invited if you want to come over to Lake Holbrook and go with us at the beach.
Well, sir, it says thou shalt not cover thy neighbor's kayak, and I'm having a hard time right now.
Yeah, I'm going to use Tex Willis's kayak because he's got four of them, and he said, let's go kayaking on.
That's the best friend to have, isn't it?
Yes, sir. I was really intrigued by the numbers you used, 45 minutes, because I jogged 10 years regularly, 5 miles a day, and I did it for 45 minutes.
You can't make this stuff up, can you?
No, sir. I lost a lot of weight during that. My body came into a reaction that was just wonderful, and I did that for 10
You mean
years.
Everything was hitting on all 8 cylinders when you did that?
I could tell if I put on just a little bit of weight.
But if you restored to your 8.5-minute mile pace, everything worked out, right?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's good. Thank you for telling me that. That's great.
Well, I did that for 10 years, and when I went to Alaska, like I've told you before, that's when I stopped, because when I moved out into the bush, I didn't have a hot shower, and it was kind of my reward of having a hot shower, you know, when I get to running. But,
what did you smell? Now tell me one more time, how big are the mosquitoes in Alaska?
Well, we call them the state bird.
And how many do you have?
If you were to go down in a small aircraft in the bush and you did have repellent, you did have clothing, you would probably last over an hour or so.
They would just storm you, wouldn't they?
If you were in the willows back in the brush, you wouldn't last very long at all.
Can I ask a question I just don't know the answer to?
Uh-huh.
Do mosquitoes only exist at 60 degrees Fahrenheit, or are they all around at 32 degrees?
I don't know how to answer it. I just know that they...
Well, what was the temperature when they would flood you or bomb you?
Okay, a lot of people can't believe it, but they winter over. They stay through the sub-zero weather down the...
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. I'm going, how can those suckers survive sub-zero weather?
That first crop is pretty murdered because they stay through the winter, and they're the really, really pesky kind, but I don't understand how they can survive through that.
There was a YouTube short video of people that were on a river in Alaska, and they panned the camera over to a moose running up to the edge of the water, and a grizzly bear swats it one time on its back, and the moose goes down with a broken, fractured spine.
Ooh.
And it was a full-grown moose, and they showed the grizzly bear grabbing the moose and dragging it with like no effort off into the woods. How do they do that?
That's a 1,000-pound animal. That's amazing. I've seen a grizzly actually attack a moose before out when I was hunting, and they'd grab hold of it and run along with it before they could bring it down. And they had a lot of strength in that grizzly, but, you know, they...
Well, the moose is no slouch, right?
No, they can... A lot of people don't know this, but we've had them get in our dog teams before, and a moose can kick forward, you know, cows, horses.
So if something's in front of it and it wants to kick you, it can do it no problem.
Yeah, they can kick forward with those lethal hooves, and there have been lots of people killed by moose attacks like that.
Well, see, I'm just not in the know because I'm not in Alaska. Is a moose delicious?
I really think that we got the benefit of my moose was my winter's meat for many years. I really think we got the benefit of those moose eating willows and the derivative of willow like aspirin. We got the benefit of the willow.
So you're saying you had no aches or pains as long as you were eating moose?
I was in tip-top shape.
What does that tell you? You didn't have all, your body wasn't swimming in an ocean of inflammation.
No, it didn't get all those chemicals through the meat.
Hang on, I need to write a note. Eat moose that's eating willow. I've got it. I'm going to make a note of that.
I'd like to do a study and see if we're right, but we think, you know, very few heart problems in natives.
Oh, well, I mean, can I just make a ridiculous comment here?
Yes, sir.
What would it be like if you were eating moose that was fed cottonseed meal, corn, and wheat? What's going to happen to that moose? It ain't going to do so hot, is it?
There was one of my friends that brought some hay up to Wiseman, or Bettles, Alaska, where I lived, and to feed his horses. And he had to stash it between the Hall Road and Bettles, which is 35 miles away.
Exactly. I remember that.
Yep. And the moose got into that, and it started causing a problem from eating that hay.
No doubt. It wasn't a natural diet, was it?
But
that's why all these young people that are learning archery skills, when they go into the forest at night to hunt for their breakfast, they're shooting Pop-Tarts at like 30 meters, and they go, "Mom, look what I brought home."
Yeah.
Ha ha.
That was my sister's nickname from her kids, Pop-Tart Mama.
I haven't the foggiest idea how she got that nickname.
Oh, goodness. But I want to ask you a real quick question. How do you, you know, I saw the benefits of fasting. I ate no chewable feed for 40 days. I would boil vegetables, drink the broth.
You see, there you go. What you're doing is you're getting the minerals and the vitamins from the broth.
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. That's smart.
And then I'd save the vegetables after I got through fasting and eat those in the freezer. But how do you fast without losing your body, your strength, you know, your muscle? That's what I was trying to figure out.
Well, that one's going to be a little bit more challenging, because and the first thought that I have is usually people that fast successfully, they've got to add significant minerals to their drinking water, and that could be as simple as a pinch of Redmond salt or Himalayan salt or Celtic salt to every glass of water you drink.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, have you ever heard of people getting paid to give their plasma?
Yes, sir.
And so, if you were to go on the internet and type in, what is plasma composed of? Well, in that liquid part of the blood that's not blood, it's more like water. You know where I'm coming from. That's where the minerals and the electrolytes and all the immune factors are. So, when you boil vegetables, you're trying to get the cell wall to break open. It's almost like if you boiled, you know, carrots on the stove, what color is the water going to be? It's going to have an orange color, isn't it?
Yes.
Or if you boil cabbage or spinach, the respective colors. But when you drink that, you're drinking the plasma of plants.
Okay.
Which is highly, highly valuable to a human being. That it's almost the same concept of juicing, but juicing would probably be more concentrated.
I need to get more into juicing.
Well, it's not a bad idea. It's not. And there's certainly a time and a place for it. Just like if somebody had dandelion root tea, you're trying to reconstitute it by putting hot water over it, but you're trying to extract the medicinal compounds that are good for the liver and the gallbladder and probably everything else, even the blood.
Yep. Yeah,
and so that's a tough one, though. How do you not lose weight? Because everybody's wired just a little bit different. And there's some people that do so extremely well with fasting as a way to heal their body, because once you stop eating food, your immune system says, okay, I can see that you're not going to give us anything to eat. I guess we'll have to eat us. And so that's where your immune system goes on a search and destroy mission to remove anything that's not essential to life. And so, if a person had a fatty liver, what do you think your body would do? It would selectively go to the fat that's in the liver, and it would burn that for caloric use and for calories.
Yes.
But and see, there are people that have published information and videos that they only live on water and sunlight, that they've gone for 3 years without eating one morsel of food. Well, I do not believe that. How long did Jesus fast when he was in the wilderness being tempted by Satan?
40 days.
That's right. 40 days. I just don't see a human being living every day of their life with never eating food again. Do you?
No.
Well, it's because these are the basic requirements between proteins and fats and carbohydrates and vitamins and minerals. You've got to have them to keep your tissues in good working order. So the fasting is really good, but if you don't have plenty of minerals, you'll probably lose your muscle mass a lot faster than if you had minerals, like adding the salt or the vegetable broth.
Uh-huh.
Or the way to stop muscle loss would be having a bone broth that comes from a cow or a chicken, turkey, or like the state bird of Alaska, maybe. Maybe you can make a bone broth out of those.
A mosquito. Yeah, right.
Hey, I haven't tried mosquito broth. You'll have to give me you'll have to tell me what your feedback is after you try it.
Oh boy, I don't miss that at all. But
it probably gives you wings.
Yes, sir. Well, I saw two things that I got rid of through fasting, and one of them was breathing the DDT and diesel that you and me used to ride our bicycles in. And
when the mosquito foggers or the bug foggers came up and down the streets.
Yeah, that. And then I painted my horse trailer with red lead paint in a barn. Started getting dizzy. I was a young man, stupid.
Well, no one had told you it was full of lead and chemicals, did they?
No, and I came out blowing my nose with a severe headache, and it was red lead paint coming out. And boy, that was, I think, the reverse of the fasting, because it says some things only eliminate that by prolonged fasting. Is that true?
Yes, sir, it is. And the thing that I thought of is, what if you're dealing with a severe spiritual problem that you can't get over?
Yes.
What if through fasting, all of a sudden, through God's grace and mercy and forgiveness, he can allow you to get beyond that and let go of the thing that's plaguing you, which is a beautiful, beautiful story.
That's what God did for me, and that's what I recommend.
I'm so glad you called today. This is such a great conversation.
Well, I sure appreciate you, and I've been listening to him for years, and I've been drinking every morning before I do anything else, is lemon.
It would be so easy for a human being to say, I understand what these guys are talking about. He had pesticide and lead poisoning, and so he fasted to get rid of it. But that may not be radically different than something that's even more toxic, like bitterness or resentment or unforgiveness or harboring a sin. Actually, sin might be the most toxic viral infection of all time.
Yeah, that was one of the other miracles I saw during that time, is for me to call and apologize
and own
up to things that had happened in the past. And that was one of the miracles during that time of fasting that I did.
Were you met with complete, total forgiveness and understanding and mercy?
I am reasonably sure I was.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. I just love that. Now, see, that's what a man after God's own heart is. He's so humble that he's willing to prostrate himself before God and say, I need relief from this burden that's on me. Just like every human being needs relief from toxins. Mm-hmm. The thing that besets you, that burdens you, that keeps your body from working right. And so fasting could help eliminate all that stuff. But spiritually, that's got to be about the most toxic burden of all time, the burden of sin.
Yeah, it really does. It really does do a number on you.
I read the other day that the Marburg virus they found in the Congo has like a 95% kill rate. And I'm thinking the Ebola virus is probably like 70%. But you know what the death rate is of sin? 100%.
Yeah, 100%. That's right.
We desperately need the Lord, don't we?
Absolutely. And every day with Jesus is better than... People ask me how I'm doing. My standard SOP reaction is better. And you know what they say 99% of the time? Oh, have you been feeling bad? And I say, no, but every day with Jesus is better than the day before.
Boy, that's good that you're saying that. You know what I read the other day in Psalm chapter 63?
What's that?
He says, your love is better than life itself. What do you think about that?
Yes, your love is better than life itself. That's so true.
That's a good thing for us to say to ourselves every day, isn't it?
Live is life, you know, to live is Christ and to die is gain.
Absolutely. Do you think the Apostle Paul knew what he was speaking of when he said that?
I do.
Boy, that's like a deep thought, though, isn't it?
It gets deeper and deeper the more you study it and show yourself approval of work.
Do you know any other book that's ever been published that's as deep as the Bible? I do not know of anything that even compares. It's incomparable.
Nope, I don't know of any other book that would even come close to comparing.
I'm so glad you told me all these things. Thank you so much for your phone call. I really do appreciate you.
Well, thank you for your service.
Now, can I call you by, is your nickname PK for Pasadena Kid?
I guess you could if you want to.
Or how do I get the letter O in that?
Well, you know, I always start off talking to people about this or that, and I can talk about a lot of things, but I tell them my first letter in my name is O, and I always come back to the same point. Jesus Christ, King of Kings and Lord of Lords.
Amen. Thank you very much for your phone call, buddy.
Thank you too, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good day. Bye-bye. All right. The number, well, I don't even know if there's a minute. Let me see. What does the clock say? I may have 2 minutes left. If you've got something that's really quick, please feel free to call. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If not, what is the other? Oh, well, I have an article right here. I know I can't get to it, but maybe I can start it. And we can start to pick it up next week, but it's in the same vein that I was referring to. The rosmarinic acid, and it's found in lemon balm. And so there's an article that was published by Turkish researchers from Cumhuriyet University in 2012. And what they're doing is they're showing that lemon balm inhibits the growth of cancer cells. So if you heard the start of the program where I referred to that study, and in the laboratory, they kept nematodes alive, and those that were fed lemon balm, oh my goodness, they lived longer than anything else did. So what I hope to do is, I'm going to come back because in this particular study, researchers would inject rats with a known breast cancer-causing substance. I mean, if they inject it into a laboratory rat, guess what's going to happen? It's going to cause breast cancer. And then they're just using rosmarinic acid that comes from Melissa officinalis, or lemon balm, and they're trying to find out what happens in these animals. Is it protective? Does it benefit them? And so it's going to be very interesting. So I'll try to hit the ground running next week, Lord willing, of course. Actually, we can't do anything apart from God. Just like the Pasadena Kid said a while ago, that's got to be one of the greatest scriptures of all time. To live is Christ, and to die is gain. But I sure hope that I can do something to give you great encouragement to help you in your journey through life, especially when it comes to natural healing.